Hey, screeners, how you doing? It's me, the one AJ, Anthony Jordan.
Coming to you from new surroundings today, from the humble abode of Nico's grandma's house. I'm Nico Lero.
It's weird? You can say the same line week in, week out. When you know it's live, it feels a bit different. It
Definitely
feels
feels
a
a bit
bit
different.
different. You can't help but just say, guys, thank you for joining us once again for another live edition of the Movie Mount Rushmore. What better way to close February than to have the Fanuary people, as it were, the fans who built Fanuary to close the show. So yeah, it's an absolute pleasure having you guys here. It's always good to do a little live show. Don't get me wrong, there's certain benefits to pre-record, but it's always good to re-interact and catch up with you guys.
Yeah, we did say when we got to 10,000, we would do live shows more regularly. We actually said when we get to 1,000, we do live shows more regularly. That was seems like a while ago now, but
Yeah, what about?
didn't think the growth would be like this. But that's, happy. All is good.
Yeah.
It's
Right.
what's
Yeah.
not good though is this bloody topic.
Oh, it's a weird one in the sense that
Oh
have
man,
I
isn't it?
grown a bit more appreciation for it? Yes. Are there some films that had me going like, can you just get on with it? But I feel like I was not in a bad way. I feel like I'm in a different, I was in the wrong space, which can be the problem with films sometimes. You could be movied out, you could be in like different things. But I will say something that I've dodged for a long while, I'm a bit more open to. I won't lie.
Want me to say something really unpopular about Westerns right off the bat? Because we're talking about Westerns today. Modern Westerns are better.
Yes and no.
With the exception of two or three, which I'm going to talk about, modern Westerns are better.
Had a lot of fun with them, don't get me wrong. There was a mixed bag. I've seen what is probably the original Western. I've been, yeah, it's been a mixed bag. It's been a mixed bag. But, hey, we will discuss and you guys can put your feelings through. And while we say we can put your feelings through, who have we got in the house? Let's have a look.
We
See.
so far there's only two people I can see, despite five viewing. Only two have commented. I can see RJ Skarenki's here. Hello again. Unforgiven, The Magnificent Seven, The Man with No Name trilogy, Pale Rider, Tombstone, Young Guns. Cool. Let me address this right off the bat. Unforgiven, Snooze Fest, The Magnificent Seven. We'll discuss. The Man with No Name trilogy, I'm sure we'll discuss. Pale Rider, whatever. Tombstone, whatever. Young Guns, haven't got around to yet. Herein lies my problem. With Westerns. They're boring. Really boring. But I'm going to show you there's some fun to be had. Gavin Mann is here. Greetings, amigos. And carries on to say, expecting tumbleweed from Mr. Hart when he hears your choices. And Andy Hart, who's here, also says, I have concerns. Yeah.
Andy, I'm gonna be very real. I'm not about to rock your world. I'm very, very like it's as real as it gets. I've done them, as I said, I'm open to them. If you want the God's honest truth, The Man with No Name or the Dollars trilogy, whichever way you want to call it, is yet to be completed. Will I is a different story, but it's again, the age-old AJ excuse. There's only so much you can fit in a week. So there's only so much that's there, and to be fair, there was a lot to be listed, but I'm not going to pretend that I've got, hey, you've got all of these and this ultra legendary John Wayne followed by this ultra legendary Clint Eastwood and then the film that should have been both of like no. So it is what it is. It's going to be a mix of both. Now,
I would like to say Andy Hart was kind enough to send me a very, very long list from one of his blogs about great Western movies. I did not consume them all. However, I consumed a few. Don't believe many of them made my top 10.
Riri Thomas has just joined us. Evening, guys. Hope you are doing well. Westerns is a tricky one. When was the last time there was one in the cinemas? Well, not too long ago, if you think of it.
Very
Also,
not
sorry
too long
guys to watch
ago.
the Iron Claw, but we still have to wait until February in the UK. Yes. I've decided about 2 years ago I was given a, I'm not gonna name the cinema brand, but I was given a voucher to a pretty decent cinema, and I've been trying to find the right film to use this voucher on. And Air, I used part of it for Air. I've decided Iron Claw is when I'm going to go and use that prestigious cinema voucher. That's the film that I'm going to enjoy my old birthday gift with. And we get Vin saying, Andy Burst through the saloon doors, head rises, and we see a lit cigar under his hat, hands hovering over his sidearm, ready to hand out some good old-fashioned justice. It could well be that, you know, but hey, this town's big enough for two of us, not anymore. There you go.
Listen, the reason I got my phone is because I'm still making notes, because I need to make the announcement of, if you've come here expecting any of the following movies, I want to save you an hour and a half of time so you're not angry with me. There's a lot of movies I watch for the first time, which I'm very proud of. One did make my top 10 and it blew me away. I was like, now this is my jam. This is a Western I can get down with. A lot of them, I was like, nah, man, this falls into the same category of I can't deal with this cowboy stuff. And it's just the product of its time, and it's a time I couldn't give a rat's what's it about. And there's some modern ones which I watched, which were glorified. And I was like, I've watched you, you're fine. I wouldn't praise you the way the world has, but hey, all things being subjective. And indeed, there's a lot of movies I have rewatched, which I previously didn't like. Here's the thing, I still don't like them.
Right.
Ever. Unforgiven, right. Greatest Western ever. 3 times I've watched that thing now. Every time I'm like, this is so boring. This is dead. Like, what is it? I prefer The Quick and the Dead to Unforgiven. Shoot me.
I'm yet to watch it. I'm not going to lie.
That's not even a lie. I actually do prefer The Quick and the Dead to Unforgiven. I might be a bit lowbrow when it comes to Westerns. Forgive me. But the other ones people rave about, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. Kill me. Yes, it has Brad Pitt, who I love. Yes, it's got really good performances from the likes of Sam Rockwell.
Hold on, just for respect's sake.
Kill me. They're not going to be on your list, these movies.
Why?
Because I know you and I know where you will have looked. You're my best friend for a reason.
You listen, how many times has there been a deep dive?
I will give you £5 for every movie I name now that's on your list without you saying where. Live on camera, £5. You could make a fortune here.
Go.
Cool. Unforgiven.
No.
The Assassination.
Yeah, it was on the list. I just didn't have time to get to it. So you can't say it wasn't
list. I'm saying on your list. That has made your top 10. Because obviously the point is here, I'm going to pay you to spoil your list. That's the name of the game here. Wow, this is aggressive for some reason. Once Upon a Time in the West.
No.
No. And this movie, people raved about it. It's so boring. It's so boring. Oh my God. I don't understand how a director, like my wife in the house, why are you promising him my money? Is this one of those what's yours is yours and what's mine is ours things, honey? Once Upon a Time in the West, which my wife, present now, and I watched during that whole little pandemic era thing when we were doing the top 100 movies from Empire. I think she really liked this. Snooze fest. Rio Bravo, I had fun with from John Wayne, and it's Tarantino's favorite movie. Fun, but can't make my top 10. So if any of those movies you're here to see, you're going to be disappointed.
A lot of the stuff that Tarantino has been called his jam has never really been my jam. I've got to be honest. As much as I like Tarantino, Tarantino stuff has never been my stuff.
No.
I don't know if you've been the same.
There's some movies Tarantino
likes. What was that French Bon d'Appart? I didn't find it remotely interesting.
If I wanted to watch one of those Jean-Luc Godard films, I would have watched Abu Dussouf, Breathless. That's good. Riri Thomas asking, have you heard Barry Keoghan is making a Billy the Kid movie? What a talent he is. See, now that's how you get me into a Western movie. Tell me Barry Keoghan's in it. And what a talent he is. He is a force of nature. Right. Spoilers aside, guys, I just wanted to give the hard Western fans here a fair warning. There are certain movies that are not going to come up. So if you're here to hear me talk about Once Upon a Time in the West, I'll be seeing you. So, should we talk movies, AJ?
Yeah, Yes, but before we do, would you like to tell everyone what the Movie Mount Rushmore is all about?
Yeah, so for those of you tuning in for the first time, thank you all for joining us. If you're new to the channel, hit the subscribe button, like the video if movies are your jam, and indeed if westerns are your jam. But how does the show work? Basically, it's a top 10 show between two best friends from school. Here's how it breaks down. AJ and I each get assigned a topic, we go our separate ways, we come right back here into the recording and deliver to the live stream in this case, and deliver to you, the silver screen dudes, our individual top 10s. This week, I get the pleasure of going first, delivering my bottom three. AJ will then deliver his bottom three. No, his bottom three. I will deliver my next two. AJ will deliver his next two. And then we will trade one apiece. If at any time while we are rounding off our individual top 10 list, one person has a movie in a higher position, the person will say,
punt.
And we will punt and talk about that movie when we get to that higher position. Once we have both rounded off our individual top 10 lists, we will compile, in the voice of the dearly departed Matthew Perry playing Chandler Bing, the movie Mount Rushmore. These are the four quintessential diverse must-see movies of the genre, which this week is
top 10 Western movies, as per Andy Hart. Now, guys, talking to Andy Hart, we're going to continue. What normally happens after this, we, the Silver Screen Dudes, have the ultimate challenge of creating the four must-see movies. That's the Rushmore. But it's over for you guys to get laser-focused to crown El Capitan, El Numero Uno, the King of Kings, the best of the best, the best, sir, with honours. And normally, I will say at this point, you head on over to X, you go to at Movie Pulse for you, fronted by good old JT of We Love Movies, or at Movie MT Rushmore, the official page, the official X page of the Silver Screen Dudes. And you will be able to go for last week's topic. However, last week's topic was filmed last week, but will be airing next week. So, spoiler, you're going to find out your favorite movies from next week. Next week's topic is
next week the topic will be, I think it's a Gavin Mann pick, the best black and white movie from any era excluding 12 Angry Men.
And the contenders will be
Seven Samurai, Raging Bull, Some Like It Hot, and M.
Now
AJ, now, can I tell you between the top three here, less than 3% separates them.
Now, I'm either extremely right or I'm either extremely wrong. I'm really hoping the film student in me was right, but I'm still going to take the stab and go for the thing that will hurt me. I'm going to go for M in fourth place.
Not only is M in fourth place, it's Coach Carter territory. M got 6.4%.
This, you cinephiles, you pretend, you fake cinephiles.
This is like one of those MJF moments, the people who pretend they watch New Japan.
Literally, if you feel that you can tell me you have watched cinema and appreciate the art of cinema, but cannot appreciate Fitz Lang's M, I can't say anymore.
Can't say anymore. Looking at that low number, it does make me think we should have included 12 Angry Men in the poll.
Because I was intrigued. And
jeez, the rest is tight, AJ. Like, wow.
Some Like It Hot at third position.
Well done. Some Like It Hot at three got 29.3% of the vote.
And going back to why I discounted 12 Angry Men, because the top two always remain the top two. When these two go in.
So I'm going to go for Raging Bull. These two.
Raging Bull was second and Seven Samurai was first.
You are incorrect.
Ah, fair enough.
Seven Samurai, dig this. Seven Samurai got 31.9%. Raging Bull got 32.4%. 5%, 0.5% separated our top two from 2,774 views. That's nuts. 0.5%. It's never been that tight without it actually being a neck and neck draw.
Interesting comments coming up here. We've got Andy saying M will be the least seen film of the list. If you're going to have a lying film, I would have... See, I need to do it again. But wasn't a fan of Metropolis, not gonna lie. It was what it was. It didn't rock my world. I didn't say it was crap, it just didn't rock my world.
Fair enough.
And Gavin Mann says, if I knew how poor M was doing, I would have voted for it. Went for Seven Samurai. You see, I mean, look, in the end of it, you vote for what you're going to vote for. It's a personal choice. It's not who's the weakest and get a sympathy vote. But hey, we stand where we stand. Andy also says, yeah. I am pretty sure I know, Andy. I'm pretty sure. Like
Andy, all-time
favorite movie. Would you go against it? There we are.
That's it. There we are.
Okay, let's get this ball rolling.
Here's the thing, Andy. Fun fact, did you know that Some Like It Hot is a remake?
As you will learn next week. We're not going to say where it's from now. You'll find out next week. Fun fact we held on to for 2 weeks. Yeah. Okay, bro, over to you, sir.
My number 10 is an absolute pandering vote with a tinge of honesty about it. Because it happens to be the benefactor of our poll, Mr. JT over at We Love Movies at Movie Polls for You on Twitter. It's his favorite Western. So partly out of love I've put it on, but partly because I see why you love it. But I couldn't put it higher than 10. The Magnificent Seven with Yul Brynner, Eli Wallach, Steve McQueen, Charles Bronson, James Coburn. Is it also your number 10?
My number eight.
Nice. So I'm going to say this right off the bat. This is 100% a poor man's Seven Samurai. I've heard in various corners of the Twitterverse and of the internet that some people say this is better than Seven Samurai, to which I say, mwahaha. No, you may have your opinion. I just choose to believe it's wrong.
Can I join you?
Go on.
Can I kind of join you in this? And I don't know if you felt the same. One, I felt it lacked a bit of character that you find in Seven Samurai with the uniqueness of the characters. But this is the part that killed me, and this is why it was where it was. How is it half the runtime of Seven Samurai but feels just as long, if not longer?
Thank you. Well said. I hadn't even considered that, but you're absolutely right.
That's what bugged me, because I really thought I was going to enjoy this. And I was like, this is half the runtime, but it feels like it's going on. And you know you're playing the comparison game for better or worse, which you don't want to. Every film should be granted on its own merit. But I felt like for it to be the amazing remake, and, you know, Magnificent Seven was the original name, UK English name of Seven Samurai until this came along. Let's see it. And I was like, right, let's do it. And I don't hate any of the actors. I don't hate the story. But I was like, you're not Seven Samurai.
Listen, there's even a little part of me that has some more enjoyment from the remake of this remake, you know, the Antoine Fuqua remake with Denzel.
Not seen it yet.
I like that film. I think it would be a disservice to put that high, because obviously when you're modern, you've got tools at your disposal that they didn't have back then. So there are feats you can accomplish while making the movie, which they simply couldn't do back then. So it's almost unfair to compare modern and old of a direct remake to remake. So out of a bit of romanticism and a bit of pandering, I have put Seven Samurai. I have put The Magnificent Seven in. It's fun. It's a like-for-like retelling, like group of outlaws get together to defend a village. And, you know, they're honorable men doing manly things because they're manly men. And they're honorable because they're going to do it for a very, very small amount of money because they feel for the villagers and their plight. It's like, cool. The characters who I thought were cool ended up not being developed enough. James Coburn. Man could throw knives faster than the other guy could shoot. That's cool. Now I want to see him developed. Nope. Backup answer.
I just felt like even the coming together just wasn't the same. You know, they happened to be in the town. It just didn't. Yeah, I don't know. And I know I should have just... And it's weird that maybe had I seen Magnificent Seven first, it would have got more appreciation. But I couldn't help but just play the comparison and be like, well, that was an easy cop-out. This was this. And I get it. You've cut the runtime down. But it just still felt lacking.
Andy Hart agrees, Seven Samurai is much better. Billy Mount in the house. Hello, howdy, Nico and AJ.
Howdy.
We've only just started, Billy, just at my number 10, which was, and AJ's number 8, which was Seven Samurai. And Gavin Mann pitches top 10 backup dancers. I actually like
just over at number 1.
Wow.
I said it.
He is a backup dancer, there's no doubt. All right, cool. My number nine. Going modern, and I know there's... So this is one of those. I just mentioned with Seven Samurai, the romanticism in me made me pick the original remake from back in the 60s. I am aware that there is original version of this. And it is good, actually, to be fair, the original. But I've got a very big soft spot for the remake just because of the powerhouse actors in it. 3:10 to Yuma is my number nine with Russell Crowe and Christian Bale. Jeez, I love this film.
I've heard you mention it before, and it was on the list of things to do. But just
dude, this is an example of a modern Western being done right. Really concise story. It's got the beautiful color that you can capture in those types of environments. Really cool atmosphere. Very interesting character development. Interesting character arcs that happen between Bale and Russell. Dialogue that you genuinely believe. A story which you can relate to. I was like, there's legitimately nothing wrong with this film. The runtime was completely consumable. I was like, I mean, I'm looking for problems with it, because as a pundit, that's kind of what we're here to do, is praise the praise and give balance by looking for where there can be improvement. I'm looking at 3:10 to Yuma. This sounds crazy. On a scoring system, I wouldn't know where to poke holes at it. Like, legitimately, if you said score 3:10 to Yuma out of 10, I might have to give it a 10 on the basis that not just on how much I enjoyed it, but it's like, what's wrong with it? There's literally nothing wrong with this film.
Fair enough. It's well paced,
well acted, well shot, well directed. It's got a good story. The dialogue's believable. The color grading's nice. The music's good. Like, what's wrong with it? I'd really struggled to find a problem with this movie. I think it's a marvelous film.
Cool. I will check it out. As I said, I'm open to watching more Westerns. It's just not something that crossed me before, and I don't hate them.
Yeah, Andy's with me. Both versions are great. Couldn't agree more. And Billy, we mentioned this. What did you think of the Magnificent Seven remake with Denzel? Really liked it. Really, 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 really liked it. He's ripped, skinny, and fat, says Billy Mark. Yes, he is. No one like Bale for when it comes to body changing. Number eight, a Western, but I think the snooty amongst us would probably classify it as a neo-Western, you know, a very nouveau-style Western. Still a Western. No Country for Old Men. This is superb. Another amazing modern Western movie. Neo, fine. One of the all-time great villains in Anton Chigurh, played by Javier Bardem. Here's proof that you're hating Hatey McHatey, Woody Harrelson. He's great in this. And funnily enough, it's the only...
But didn't make my list.
Sorry?
But didn't make my list.
That's between you and yourself. What didn't work for me was the closing of this movie. That last sort of 10 to 15 minutes that you spend with Tommy Lee Jones, I thought was a real, real deflating, let the air out your sails closing. It felt like so anticlimactic based on the journey we'd just gone through with these characters. But man, come on. A villain that walks around with freaking air and an air gun. And making people choose whether they live or die. I'm like, you're a Western Joker. Like, you're a nasty piece of work. Oh, and Josh Brolin, of course. And if you want to talk tension and atmosphere, the movie does something which I always admire, which is so, so brave, and which so many directors, I believe, don't trust audiences to be able to consume. Moments of tension, just go silent. Don't play music. Don't have sounds. Just have the natural sounds of things like the wind rustling, maybe some tumbleweeds, maybe some rocks going, right? That point where Josh Brolin finds the money, and he knows it's blood money. He's come across the scene and he's like, yeah, okay, I shouldn't be here and I shouldn't have found this. But it's so beautifully done where he just sort of looks, he knows he's in trouble with this money, but he just sort of looks around. All quiet, and he's like, and you understand everything without having any music, any unnecessary voiceover, any dialogue or monologue. You understand everything. Like, can he really get away with this? Is it safe? How badly is this going to come back and bite him? Right? It's brilliant filmmaking from the Coens, this. I love it.
Cool. I liked it. The silence, it works. Don't get me wrong, certain films work, and it makes me, I can work with it, put it that way. The pacing just felt a bit long to me, but then it's a Western. What am I looking for? So, I don't know. Yeah, it made my list when we had top 10 Josh Brolin movies, but yeah.
It's a very good film. He's great in it, Brolin. And yeah, Billy, I believe you're right. The money never was recovered. And that puts it, and Andy, stay tuned. And that puts it over to you, AJ.
Sorry, bear me a second. I just want to see what Andy said. I beg to differ.
You know, of course you know.
I know a certain love that came up when we were doing other stuff before. Right.
Frank Torres in the house. Hello, Frank. Great to see you, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, Frank. Hope all's well, mate. Hell's well as well. And well done for that project you had to the people of Miami. I thought that was really touching. Yeah. Couldn't support it because, well, payday's just reaching. But yeah, big up to you for that one. Okay. Normally, this is a film that's hated by AJ, but hey, the franchise is loved by AJ. So it's one of those, like, sympathy entries. It wasn't going to be on my list at first. And then I was like, yeah, you know what? It will be. Yep. Doc, we got to go back. Back to the Future, Part 3.
Do you know
from my scene, AJ? You knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming.
It was either one of the things. I thought it was going to be worse or extremely high on my list. I don't know which way you thought it was going
to
go.
No, I thought it was going to be higher than this, to be fair, knowing you in this franchise, because I know it's your all-time fave, but I still haven't got around to watching it. Seen part one and two, still haven't seen this one.
One thing that happened when I'd done the... I remember, funny enough, this is the only one I saw in the cinema, and I remember having a great time with it. It's when I got the DVD collection of the trilogy, I kind of, I don't want to say lost love, but I was like, the same beats are going over in this, but like the films all start the same way. Maybe I should have just watched them with a bit more of a gap. And three has just, like, two's always been my favorite, and then it's hard to be the follow-up to someone's favorite in a franchise, isn't it? It's just the way it is.
Sure.
But this one is one of these things where Doc Brown has gone back. So if you follow on from number two, he's gone back. He's told Marty time to travel, and I think this time it's like, you know, before it was like, I can't remember what it was, we don't need something in number two, and this time it's like, well, we're going way back and this doesn't exist anymore. Roads, there's no roads here, and it's all to do with trains and XYZ. Instead of the DeLorean, the train is using for time travel. Marty can't believe where he is. Obviously Biff is still there, but now it's not Biff's grandchild, it's Biff's ancestors. The same beats are there throughout the way, and you know, you can't call Marty Yeller by any means. Actually, that
Yeller.
Does that term mean anything to you at all?
Yeller? Chicken.
Are we allowed to talk Yeller while we're here?
Old Yeller. You can talk Old Yeller if you want.
Well, I wasn't sure if it was on your list. That was originally my number 10. It was in contention. It nearly was on my list, and I was like, no, I've had a lot more fun with. It was nice to see for the first time, to be honest, but I had a lot more fun with Back to the Future. But if you know your Back to the Future beats, it's there. And it went Western, and Marty still won't be called Yeller by any ways. And later on, we'll see one of his inspirations on how he learned how to win the fight. But we digress.
I have to say, I still think the first one is my favorite in the franchise.
It will be to a lot of people, and I don't disagree. I can understand why. Mine is just a very personal thing of the way I liked the way they sold the future to me. I was just like, oh, yeah, God, is this what? So that it's one of those things as a kid.
Right.
Okay, in at number 9, this, I believe, was the breakthrough performance for Mr. Western himself, John Wayne. I was going to watch another one that's highly anticipated by him. Also got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Not that it matters, but I'm always intrigued when I see the big old 100 on the
number. Audience or critic?
I believe it's critic. Okay. When I see it, I can sit on Google and it's got 100. I don't really go clicking further. I don't know if you've heard of it. There is a remake, but this is the black and white original.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Stagecoach.
Yeah.
Very interesting film that, again, sometimes it's just the beats and how you appreciate it and what you're looking for. But you've got all of these people who coincidentally are traveling by a stagecoach, all for different reasons and all for different purposes. Well, same thing. But, you know, they're all nine people jumping into a stagecoach for to get to a certain destination. And before that, we're told of the Apaches who are taking over certain areas and they've got to travel through. And one of the, I can't remember, I should remember the name of the main person. The main villain is out. So it's going to get extra dangerous to travel to that area. So the stagecoach initially takes one stop where this lady's expecting to see her husband. And she goes off to realize that he's no longer there. He's moved on somewhere else. So then now, because he's part of the brigade, and that's the journey, it's a case of, do you go back to what is safe, or do you continue on the journey to start for where other people wanted to go on, and, you know, for her to find her partner? And along the way, they've also bumped into good old John Wayne, who's a young renegade who's had a troubled past, but is now trying to live on the right surface, live on the right side of the tracks, as it were. And you see him forming a bond because there are two ladies, one who's quite high society, the other one who's a prostitute. But he's trying to just treat her like a lady because he just sees a lady, you know. Hey, ma'am, would you like to sit at a table and all of that stuff? And, you know, how they shun her. And but it's all people who are forced to live, to get on within the confines of this carriage, the stagecoach, and the surround, the horses and what have you, going through this journey, and the impending threat of the Apaches who will be attacking. It was quite interesting. It you can see it's one of the early, if not first, Western, and it sets the tone for what's there. A nice little shootout at the end. I appreciated it. As you said, kind of like with Magnificent Seven, the original versus remake. When you're old, you're old, and this is like 1930 something, you know. There are certain beats that you can't you're like, really? But I thought it was still a good film. I really had a good time with it.
Listen, I've never been that down with John Wayne. I've always found him, he's kind of like Humphrey Bogart for me. I don't know why, I just don't like his face. Dude, it's one of those things. I can't abide by Humphrey Bogart. I know he's a legend of the silver screen, but every time I see him, I'm just like, I want to slap you.
You know, sometimes you're looking for like a Passing of the Torch movie. And I was like, I wonder if there is a film with John Wayne and Clint. And I heard he had this random, like, self-inflicted beef with Clint Eastwood. And I was like, you were a bit of a prat, weren't you?
This is my issue with John Wayne. He's a real bell end. That and the fact that I don't very much align with his politics doesn't help. This guy was a staunch Republican, like the bad kind. I don't like him much as a person, and because
sometimes that makes it difficult to then watch their films, because you just, when you see them, everything else triggers it. But
well, this is I didn't grow up in an era like, you know, God forbid, here's context, God forbid we found out that, you know, Arnie was some sort of vile person. Please God, don't let it ever happen. But, you know, that would break us so much because we grew up loving this guy. I never grew up loving John Wayne, right? Because I didn't grow up in an era where he was in prominence. You know, it was one of those, you have to go back and look for him. And, you know, when you're 9 or 10, I don't know about everyone, but at least me, I didn't go back and look for old movies when I was 9 or 10. I was watching Arnie. When I've gone back and looked, I'm at an age where I'm also going to, you know, self-educate myself on what the person was, what he did, what he stood for. And I'm like, I don't like what you represent. You're not a very nice person.
Yeah, so, no, I get that.
John Wayne's a sticky one for me. And Billy, yeah, I just don't like Humphrey Bogart. His movies are fine, overrated, which doesn't mean bad, but overrated. Cool. So that was your 9?
You know what's really difficult for Bogart? And it's, again, as you said, it's the overratedness. My first intro to him was The Almighty Casablanca. And because that's meant to be like the magnum opus of Humphrey Bogart, I'm one of the greatest films ever. And I was like, it just made it a bit hard to then want to follow the rest of his films, you know. It's just,
this is it, and that film is overrated. Would I ever say that Casablanca is a bad movie? But yeah, Billy, to answer your question, Casablanca is overrated for me, yes. And I can't stress this enough, for me, overrated does not mean it's bad. You can be an amazing film and still be overrated.
And in this case, it's that thing of Chris must see. You have to see it. This is the greatest love story of all time. Now, I'm not going to go in front of any film, but I'm like, I have had so much more emotion in 100 other films than what I got in Casablanca. And it's not even to say, like, you know, there are certain films you could be like, well, this was the foundation. I could see how it inspired. Kind of like what I was saying with Stagecoach. I could see the shootout. I was like, well, this was the blueprint for every other shootout that happens in a Western. I don't see that with Casablanca. I'm just like, it's a film I can follow. That's it. I've always said that I can be quite ignorant of films and I miss a lot.
Bogart is the god of film, though. Well, that's just like, you know, your opinion, man. that was your nine. And your eight was Magnificent Seven, right?
That's correct, sir. Yep. So then cool. That was my eight. And then over to you.
Yeah, one that I grew up with and that I've always had a soft spot for. Now, we were just talking about great love stories. This is a very, very underspoken great love story, but geez, it's an emotional roller coaster. Love this film. Legends of the Fall with Aidan Quinn, Anthony Hopkins, and Brad Pitt. Heartbreaking and very, very almost like an anti-Western Western, if that makes sense. It's like set on a ranch, three brothers grow up in the kind of frontier wilderness. Their father was a Civil War. I believe it was Civil War. Anyway, their father was a war hero, very against them going to war. Anyway, World War One arrives, the brothers go off to war, things happen, and, you know, minor spoiler, but it's beginning of the movie stuff, only two of the three come back. Herein lies the problem. The one who doesn't come back had a fiance, played by Julia Ormond. There's a name for you cinephiles to remember. Who remembers her? She was meant to be the next big thing, and she was for about 1 minute. I really liked Julia Ormond. I don't know what happened to her. Like, the Hollywood just said no, I guess. I thought she had something. Very, very kind of delicate English Rose vibe. I dug her. So she's there on the ranch waiting with the dad. Her husband doesn't come back. And then these two brothers come back and they both kind of have a thing for her. Except one of them is this kind of straight shooting banker type, Aidan Quinn. And the other is a freaking bear slaughtering wild man suffering from PTSD. Tristan, played by Brad Pitt. Oh my God, this film. It is such a roller coaster that you go on with the journey of these brothers. It is heartbreaking. The things that both Tristan and not Samuel. Samuel's the younger brother. What's the older brother called? Damn it. Samuel and... it's killing me. Anyway, what these brothers go through is truly heartbreaking. And Hopkins gives a very understated but brilliant performance. One that I don't think people talk about enough. He gets a stroke part of the way through the movie, and he's having to act kind of like a, you know, I'm not comparing a stroke to cerebral palsy, but the way that Daniel Day-Lewis gave a very, very physical performance in My Left Foot, Hopkins kind of brings that to the party halfway through this movie, and you're like, damn, remind me why you're one of the all-time greats. It's just great, man, from start to finish. It's very romantic. It's almost like a Western fairy tale, if anything, or a tragedy. Very, very Greek tragedy, you know, very melodramatic, this movie. It's not, well, this town ain't big enough for the both of us, pilgrim. It's none of that nonsense, which I personally have got no time for and hate. This is my type of Western. Love this film. Pedro in the house! Opa!
How it is, sir?
Yeah. Pedro Sanchez says there was something about Julia Ormond's career and Harvey Weinstein, if I remember correctly. That's going to get us demonetized, that name. Yeah, man. And Andy Hart says, if you like Julia Ormond, check out Smilia's Sense of Snow. I shall. Thank you. But yeah, man, Legends of the Fall, that's my jam. And I've brought it up a few times. I imagine still to be seen for you.
Yes, but I know you have brought it up. I do recognize the name.
Really good. Your type of movie, this one, by the way, Ajay. You'll love this.
Okay, cool.
Actually, come to think of it, really your type of movie. I think this is one of those movies you're going to watch and go, whoa, Brad Pitt in this, you know, bro. I'm like, I know. I think you'd actually really get a kick out of this. Put this higher up your to-see list. I have a feeling we're about to say punt for my number six, but that's fine. My number six from Quentin Tarantino, Django Unchained.
We are punting. I was trying to remember where I put it, to be honest, but yeah, no, it's not seven, it's not six. Yeah, so yeah, it's definitely a punt. Yeah, it's not number one. But yeah, I think anyone who's seen this film might give me a lot of hate, but I, you know what, I remember always wanted to see it, it kind of intrigued me when I was a kid and it came out, and I was like, hey, it's there, now's a chance to watch it. And I went out there and I was like, you know what, it was light, it was quick, it was a Western that I didn't too badly hate. Yeah, it's an all-female cast of Western bad girls. Have you seen
what this? Is this?
It's got Andy McDowell, it's got Drew Barrymore, it's got I can't remember the other,
so new, isn't it?
But yeah, it's an all-female Western.
Drew Barrymore and Andy McDowell.
Take a group of girls who come again.
I said Drew Barrymore and Andy McDowell, most AJ picks ever.
you know where you're going with this, but I want to say Faye Dunaway. I can't remember the other two's names. Oh, now it's bugging me. But basically, they are four ladies who make a living through the oldest former trade, as it were. They are ladies of the night, and basically, what happens is you see Drew Barrymore with a gentleman, an aristocrat who spent a bit of money. He spent a bit of money for his birthday and he believes he can get what he wants from her from it. And then one of the others, whose name I can't remember, but she was the lead cowgirl in this film, ends up shooting him dead in the salon, in the saloon where he is, from the upper floor, shoots him down, he lands on the table, goes, kills him. And now they're going to hang her for her crimes. How dare she? And that's when the other three decide to save her. Essentially, they jump their horses, they get their carriage, and they didn't even shoot. They just got a horse to come riding off, as far as I remember. But yeah, that was it. And they make their grand escape. And now you've got... Oh, what is the name of those annoying villains? The Pinkertons. Yes, now you've got the Pinkertons who are trying to chase these girls down for their crime. I was like, that's Red Dead. I love it already. But yeah.
That's Western history. The Pinkertons were real.
I know. It was. The more I was like, there's more of a link here. I'm not going to lie. I'm not too au fait with Western history, you know, and then I realized what it was, so that was it. So
then, now that it's really interesting.
It really is. It really is, and it, again, it's something for me to delve into that bit more deeper. So, you're gonna have to excuse me because I really need to remember this lady's name, because this girl is the one who now is going for the. She's going to make a withdrawal, and they've decided to open their own salt mill. That's their plan. They're going to open a salt mill somewhere far away and just move on, you know, live a different life from what they were previously living. And she's going to make this withdrawal from when she used to hang
while you're looking for her name. While you're looking for her name, I'm just going to read out a few comments here. So Mandrake has come in, welcome, and says the score from Legends of the Fall was great. I also remember that album selling a lot. The score was great. Well spotted on that one. Billy Matt and Andy, I see your questions. Stay tuned. Mandrake says, I'd rank The Hateful Eight a lot higher than Django. Interesting. We will talk about The Hateful Eight. Stay tuned. AJ knows where I'm going with that. And Andy Harper, is it you, AJ? Bad Girls is a terrible film.
Do you know what? I just, to me, it was just, like, here's the thing. You can take certain levels of...
Sorry.
Do you know what's really funny? Is that the lady of the house, while I'm watching Bad Girls, the film, she was actually rewatching the prison series on ITVX. So it was like, we're both watching Bad Girls, but two very different spectrums. Madeline Stone.
Bad Girls for life. Mandrake says, AJ should watch Bandidas with Selma Hayek and Penelope Cruz. Similar vibe. And Andy says, yes, that, also a terrible film.
One probably inspired the other. So yeah, Madeline Stowe's the one who's going to go and withdraw some money from a bank that she's had with interest, and eventually, as she's doing that, the crew she used to run with have come and like robbed the bank, and initially tell her she could take her money, but as she stepped out, they've taken her money. Now she's on a case. It just starts to pursue, and it becomes very Western from that point. I don't want to over go through the film, but it's them trying to get their money back and live their life. Look, is it your traditional Western? No, is it the greatest?
Mandrake says, I don't think that even the cast of Bad Girls would defend that movie, so kudos to AJ. Have you picked a bad Western movie here, AJ?
Listen, I've put Back to the Future Part 3 on. I'm not exactly going to expect anyone to go for it to be like world changing. But in a world of where Westerns drag, which they can do, this
oh, one, drag.
This one, I was like, okay, it's not the world's greatest story, but you know what? I got through it beginning to end without getting bored.
Billy Matt asks, are you guys familiar with Madeline Stowe and Mary Stuart Masterson? Well, AJ is, I'm not. And Frank Torres, I'm just imagining him doing the Homer Simpson donut voice here. Madeline Stowe.
Not one to disagree. That way, she wasn't bad. It helped to watch the film. But look, yep. It was an easy watching Western. That's the way.
Okay. So that was your 7 or your 6? Sorry.
That was my 7. My 6, on the other hand, is a film I will defend to the hills. I don't care if you guys love it. I don't care if you guys hate it. This is a Western I watched as a kid, and this is a Western I love, and I will continue to watch. A friend of the Silver Screen Dudes, when I say a friend, someone we like to follow, who is hated by the public eye, good old Mel Gibson in Maverick. Yes, you can also see Jodie Foster and James Garner in that. I like this film. You
okay.
Don't like it? You haven't seen it?
Never seen it.
All right. So basically, it's all about being on a steam paddle boat. And as you can see, they're all dressed. It's in that Western era. And Mel Gibson plays something. I can't remember. Is it JD Maverick or something like that? And it's all about card games. This is years ago I've seen it, but I remember having great fun with it. It's all about winning. It's like a good poker game tournament that takes place along these paddle boats and what have you. And he is the ultimate card trickster. He knows all the different tricks of being, you know, of how to win and will he get caught? Will he not get caught? And then you've got James Garner, who's playing a sheriff, who's always trying to catch him out and what have you. It's a lot of deviousness. It's a lot of comedy. It was a lot of fun. It's been a while since I've watched it, but it's one I would highly recommend. Maverick was great fun, and it has a few twists and plot turns in it as well, which I thought was nice, and I had a great laugh with it.
Well, a lot of people are supporting you on that. Andy Hart says Maverick is a fun movie. Mandrake says Maverick belongs in the smallest of great remakes adaptations. Great film. Billy Mount says, I love it, and I love Mel Gibson and Richard Donner. Yeah, man, fair. You've got support on that one. Frank Torres says Westerns can be divisive, but that's what makes the genre so special during discussion. Yes. Gavin Mann says, Highway to the Paddle Zone. Stop. Yes.
I love these little quips that come out. Thank you, Gavin. You've been missed.
Stop. I'm never going to be able to forget that. That was actually annoyingly good. Highway to the Paddle Zone. That's really good. That's... Damn it. Oh, very good. You heard they're making a top 10-3, by the way.
Oh, really? Funny enough, I was meant to email that company to watch it in 4D. I just didn't get a chance to. Andy, just to your credit, I didn't know that until this week, actually. Maverick was a TV show with James Garner in the lead, so it's a kind of like semi-sequel, which I thought was kind of cool, like from my this small memory of the show. I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense why he was cast. It was actually really cool.
So over to my number 5.
Yes, sir.
Well, Billy Mann and Andy Hart, you were both calling for it. And AJ, I mentioned that there was a Western I saw for the first time that has shot into this list. Oh my god, I love this film. The original Django with Franco Nero. AJ, I cannot begin to tell you how freaking cool this film is. Like, now, if every Western was like this, this would be one of my favorite genres. 88 minutes, no faff, no fat on the bone, full on. Over the top, in your face, cool. Just cool. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, I know that The Man with No Name preceded this movie by just 2 years. Oh, this is going to be unpopular. I think Franco Nero might be cooler than Clint Eastwood. This dude effervesces cool. I watched him and I was like, I cannot take my eyes off you. And then the more, okay, no one in the comment section spoil the big surprise, the big coffin thing. I haven't looked at the comments. If you've made any comments about the coffin, delete it immediately because I don't want that ruined for AJ. So AJ, this movie opens with our hero dragging a coffin behind him like a freaking Undertaker through the desert. And the more this movie goes on, you're like, what's in the coffin, man? So it's kind of like a MacGuffin. Now, they answer this halfway through, and you think, well, where does the movie go from there? Oh, it goes places. So cool. Now, I'm watching this, and I'm like, why does this all feel so familiar? You mentioned the Pinkertons before. Bro, when I tell you, this is like the original Red Dead Redemption, the movie. Red Dead Redemption.
I've not played Redemption. I've only played here. 2.
Bro, okay. The first game got its ideas here. There is a thing that happens, and I figured it out only because I've played Red Dead Redemption, the game. There's about halfway through, because it's 2 acts. It's basically what happens before you find out what's in the coffin. Before the coffin and after the coffin. Both are fantastic. But in the build-up to just what's in the coffin, I'm like, this seems familiar. Wait. Let me look at this a bit more. Is this Red Dead? Oh, by the way, the city of Valentine in Red Dead Redemption 2? Yeah, that's this movie. 100%. When you see the town, the derelict town with the muddy road instead of the dry sand, just the mud like Valentine, that's this. That got it here. So instantly, I'm like, it's Red Dead Redemption 2. One, this is freaking awesome, and I'm watching. I'm like, so what's with the coffin? And then halfway through, I'm like, I remember the coffin scene in Red Dead Redemption 1. Wait, and then I'm like, surely not. No, they wouldn't. And then I was like, I don't want to overhype myself so that when we find out what's in the coffin, it's not what's in the game, it's what's in the game. I was like, stop it. How has a Western movie from the 60s done something this freaking cool? AJ, I love this movie so much. I started by watching it dubbed. I loved it so much. I went deep into the Seven Seas and found this movie in its original Italian with subtitles, how it should be consumed. Jesus, this film is cool. Franco Nero, is one of the baddest mofos to ever walk the planet. John Wayne and Clint Eastwood can suck a flub compared to this guy. He is such a badass, I can't tell you. What he does, dude, okay, there's a scene I have to describe for you. He goes into this town, into the brothel, and the local mob kind of surround him. This general surrounds him. 6-on-1. And not in some lame, like you get in so many of these Magnificent Seven, ham-fisted Western. Very so. None of that ricocheting biznatch. This is a 60s movie, and the guy moved like John frickin' Wick. He was so quick. I was like, what did I just see? This is a modern movie. What am I watching? And then he turns to the general and he says, how many men do you have? No, sorry. Before he says that, he says, he's pointing his gun at the general and he looks in the barrel. He goes, one bullet against 3 of your guys. Well, that wouldn't be fair on you. I'm like, 1-on-3, that wouldn't be fair. Stop it. After he's just annihilated the gang. And then he says to the general, how many men you got? 48. Bring them all next time to make it even. And I'm like, what am I watching? This is amazing. Like, it's got every single wonderful Western trope in there. It's got the girls with their fans in the brothel and the whorehouse, you know, that with the crazy, I don't know why I did Star Wars Cantina there, but it, playing on the piano. It's got beautiful surroundings, unique, because normally you see that dusty town. This is a muddy town. This, that fact of using mud in this town gives such a different vibe to the movie, I can't tell you. This great villain in the general, the Mexicans that come in. We don't need to do Mexican standoffs. We're moving in this movie. The goal, dude, there's a chase scene in this. You want to talk stagecoach chase scenes? It's like out of Red Dead. He's on a stagecoach with gold in the back, and there's freaking horses chasing after him. I'm like, what am I watching? This is so freaking cool. Bro.
I'm sold. This, I'm sold. I'm not going to lie.
This
I'm sold.
Film, 88 minutes, Amazon Prime, free. It is so good. Yeah, okay, let me read some of these comments now, just because I think I've made people happy. Oh, by the way, fun fact, there's a scene in Django Unchained where Django goes up to the bar and talks to this random stranger. That random stranger's Franco Nero. I was like, nice. Oh, and the opening music in Django, for Django, that's from this movie. So I'm watching this. It's one of those wonderful things. You go back and watch it and you realize, Jesus, mother of God, you were influential to video games and all the movies that followed you. And yeah, I know that Eastwood beat you to the punch with the poncho and the hat and the calm, cool, gruff look. You're so much cooler than Eastwood. I'm sorry. Franco Nero slaps Clint Eastwood. He just does. And yeah, I can't believe I'm saying that. I really can't believe I'm saying that. Billy Mount says, yes! I absolutely love this freaking movie. Never seen it. Well, Frank Torres, get on it. Amazon Prime, free, 88 minutes. Franco Nero is amazing in this. Agreed. The original Django is great indeed. This movie is absolutely pulls no punches with its violence. Oh, AJ, it is so violent. Even by today's standards, I'm watching it going, like, there are...
You know what? The trailer bodies in the poster alone tells me it's something. Dude,
there are things that he does to people and that they do to him, and you're like, violation? Like, what am I watching? Oh, there you go. Andy knows this. So, yeah, he had a cameo in Django Unchained. Yeah, man. Would you guys consider Hell or High Water a Western? Asked Mendrick. I would. And I'm really angry I didn't think about that. Thank you for that, Franco. Gavin Mann says, solid, Nico. Tempting runtime in Prime Video on the watch list. Gavin, do it, bro. You will so not be disappointed. Yeah, man. Just, oh. And Andy Hart says, I thought the Wild Bunch was brutal until I saw Django. AJ, you watch this film. I cannot stress this enough. It does not feel like a product of its time, other than the way that it's graded and the limitations of the hardware they're using to film the damn movie. You can see there's, you know, there's grainy, there's noise artifacts in the film because it's shot on old film reels, you know, it's old, you know, 4x5 format, you know, Super 8. It's got that old school feel to it. The things they are doing in this movie, the things they are saying, this does not feel like a 60s movie. It is so ahead of its time, I can't tell you.
Okay. No, I am sold. I am sold. I'm not going to lie.
Mandrake says, have you guys done an episode about great films that are under 90 minutes? I miss those. Feel like we have.
We have. I don't know.
Might Gavin be on the old channel. Gavin Mann is the one to ask that, Mandrake. He's listened to every single one of our episodes.
It's done, but it's under the old banner. It's not under this banner.
Should we redo it as a video for this season? We can add it. Great movies under 90 minutes.
Can do. I wouldn't.
Let's do it. I'll add that to the list. And while I'm doing that, over to your number five. Sorry, I took up some time there, but Django.
Ha. Oh. Do you know what? It's really funny that you talk about the levels of cool, because some people say that this, the main villain in this film I'm about to bring up, is like current levels of cool. But he wasn't, again... He's Mr. Backup Dancer to me. It's someone else who stole the film for me. I'm not going to mention the main star of the film because I don't know if that's a demonetization situation nowadays. He's recently dropped by Disney. That's enough to say on that one. Yeah.
Who are we talking about?
The Harder They Fall.
This is all you, brother. Talk to me.
Have you seen it?
I haven't, no.
It's Netflix. It's a Netflix movie starring JM and Idris Elba as the villain. But to me, the absolute standout star was Lakeith Stanfield, who plays Cherokee Bill. So it's based off of a real life villains and cowboys of the West before. I don't know if they're actually black, but it's like an all-black cast, which was kind of interesting to see. First time I watched this film, I kind of gave up on it. I was like, I don't think it's for me. But with Westerns being the topic of the week, I was like, I'll give it another shot. Now, the film starts off with Idris Elba coming into JM's family house when he's a young kid, and he essentially kills both his parents and marks that he brands him with a cross on his forehead, and that's the thing. And then kind of like Picture the Bride with that Vivica Fox's daughter, if you're out for revenge, which you're entitled to, come and find me. And then we kind of spin the clock to 20 years later, and yes, the young kid is now the recently dropped Disney star. As, you see him getting revenge on one of the other people that was running with Idris Elba, and that's how the film begins, and it's there. But you've now seen that JM had a group of people who have long disbanded, but the other group that was run by Idris Elba have recently come together, and this is when the film got to me. It's when they stop the train and they take on I'm going to call them police because I really can't get the words. It's been a long few days, guys. I apologize. And they're taking it over to free Idris Elba from the train. And they're, you know, from this train, because they're taking him somewhere and they free him. And this is where the film begins. But as I said, Lakeith Stanfield is one of these. He's a quick draw. He plays Cherokee Bill. One quick draw of a villain. But it's the cool, calm demeanor in which he talks to his opponents that just sold me so much on the way it is. You know, even like, I've got one of your men hostage, and I'm not a man for violence, but if I need to, I will do. It's before that he says to people, this is a hold up, and I don't like to go to violence, but if you guys don't follow, I will have to use it where it needs to be. And one guy's like, you will not take this train. He goes, always. There's always a hero. Why do we always have to be a hero? And he literally demolishes the guy in seconds, and he's like, this is what I'm talking about. I don't want to use violence, but I do. And it's just this long journey. But with this group coming out and Idris Elba now being freed, the Disney recently dropped star reforms his group. And there's this clash, you know, it's all building up to the escalation of a clash. I was actually really intrigued by this. I felt the end kind of dragged, and there were certain parts that I was just like, okay. But it had a few plots and twists and turns in it. And I was actually taken in. I actually enjoyed it when I really gave it more of an effort than I did the first time around. So I'd say, it's on Netflix. Netflix movies aren't always a winner. This one wasn't bad.
Okay. Well, it's not the biggest praise in the world. Netflix movies aren't always bad. By the way, we're going to definitely be talking about Netflix and their shift in power on Silver Screen News, which will be out later in the week. Yeah. So do stay tuned to the channel for that. Gavin Mann says yes, not on the new channel. Billy Mann says, yeah, him, not gonna say it. Andy Hart says, The Harder They Fall is a solid movie, debut director, better than Tarantino's two attempts at a Western. I would argue three. Inglourious Basterds is a World War II crossed with the Western, is it not?
Yeah. Did you see the PC there?
Let me have a look.
Do apologize. I just need 2 minutes.
We're not or dos?
Just don't worry, but I'll be quick.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are about to be a one-man show. Hi. I'm not even going to lie. AJ needs a bathroom break. Man's just been thrown under the bus. I would like to know from everyone what you think of our list so far while I stall for time. And while I stall for time, I'm also going to introduce you to my number four, which I don't think will be on AJ's list, frankly. Andy Hart, I'm glad you agree. Inglourious Basterds is great. So you do agree. It's kind of like a World War II. I mean, that opening is definitely a Western style, isn't it? Billy Mount, what did you think of Idris Elba as Knuckles? Not much. Like, he did a voice. that sounded exactly like him. It's the same way of, what did I think of Chris Pratt as Mario? Not much. Is Mario sounding like Chris Pratt? And what did I think of the dozens of ripoffs and unofficial sequels for Django? Do you know what? I haven't gone as far as to watch them. I kind of read about them because once I finished consuming Django, I was like, I need more of this. And then I was like, oh my God, there's more Django. And then I read up about them and I was like, oh, but it's not actual Django. Not for me. Not interested. But yeah, man. Guys, I cannot stress this enough. For those of you who have not seen Django, worldy of a movie. Absolute worldy of a movie. But my number four, some people may argue, is not a Western. And if you are one of those people, let me know in the comments, because I would disagree. Obviously, it's my number four. But my number four, the movie that won Leonardo DiCaprio his Oscar, I'm going to go with The Revenant. Now, this movie may not be a Western in the traditional sense, whereby it's not big open plains in summertime. It's not big sandy environments. It's snowy environments. But I don't believe that weather doth make or doth not make a Western. This just happens to be a Western in the snow. They are literally... And AJ's back. I was just saying, AJ, unless you're going to punk me, my number four is The Revenant.
No, do you know what? I was tempted to, but I left it.
I have to put it on. I think it's a really wonderful movie. Now, listen, not. I'm going to be a little bit un-PC here, but you know, what was the game that very much in our parents and grandparents' generation, it was Cowboys and Indians, right?
Yeah.
This is literally that.
It is. And that's why I was really, really tempted to put it on. I was like, it has the Western beats.
Who knows? DiCaprio fights with a bear, Billy Mount. There is nothing dull about this movie, Andy. You shall behave. Yeah, I love this movie. I like the way that for the whole movie, from the moment where he's abandoned, he's basically, it's a battle against himself to see if he's got the fortitude to not only make it through his injury, it's a battle against the elements, which really tests him because he's meant to be like ultimate frontiersman. So how well can he actually handle the elements? How well can he actually handle this environment? We shall find out. And he's on the hunt, man. Like, he's the whole movie, he's being hunted. It's freaking great. I'd also like to say, this is the movie that, this may not be the first movie that Lubezki did, but it's the movie that really made me stand up and notice Emmanuel Lubezki and his cinematography, because Jesus Christ, this film is beautiful. Every single frame in this movie looks like a tableau. You could pause, freeze any frame, and you could like, let's make
it. It is beautiful. It's a very, very beautiful.
So pretty. I love DiCaprio's performance in this. I don't think it's the best of his career, but he was overdue an Oscar.
Not what should have got him the Oscar, but it got him the Oscar. Put it that way.
It's like The Departed's great. Shouldn't have been that got Scorsese the Oscar, but it got him the Oscar. It's one of those types of things. Billy Mount says, "Does Dances with Wolves count as a Western?" Sure. It's not one I particularly like, but sure. Nico, another Franco 60s Western I highly recommend to you, Kioma. Sold. Franco's in it. I'm watching it. Bro, this is my guy now. Like, if I was alive in the 60s, I would feel about Franco Nero the way I feel about Sam Rockwell and Barry Keoghan. It's like, that's my guy. Don't talk. Like, nice. Yeah, mate. He's nice. Sick, this guy. But yeah, love The Revenant. You're number four.
Say punt.
Say punt. is it... Just say punt?
Just say punt.
Punt.
Okay, over to you.
That's how that feels. Okay. I'm going to keep doing that.
There are times when you just know. And you just know, okay?
You don't know what my number one is. All right, my number three then. So... feel like I'm being a bit disingenuous here. Let me explain. So my number three is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So, Lee Van Cleef, Clint Eastwood, Eli Wallach. Now, here's why I feel I'm being a bit disingenuous. Is this a remarkable film? Absolutely incredible. Is it the one that of the Man with No Name trilogy that people will usually pull for because it's most epic in scale, got arguably the most interesting and well-rounded story of the of those movies? Yes. Here's where my honesty needs to come in. This may not be the popular thing to say, but you guys don't tune in for me to recite things that you can read anywhere else online. You would come in, I hope, to hear different takes on things. Here's an honest take. My favorite of the Man with No Name trilogy is part two. It's for a few dollars more. My reason for putting it on here, just so we're clear, is not to diminish how good this film is, because it's freaking incredible. I think if we're looking in the realm of Rushmore, because remember, when we put it to Twitter by proxy, we're going with the populist thing, right? Have to do it. I don't think there would be enough Xanax in the world to stop my to stop me hearing my phone going off, going, "Why is There Will Be Blood not on there?" And for a few dollars more is. The world seems to think that's the best of the three movies. Here's the thing. I would agree that objectively it might be the best of the three movies. I still got a real soft spot for number two, and I think that's probably the way I'd lean. But since this is the one I picked, so good. Clint Eastwood plays the good, Lee Van Cleef plays the bad, Eli Wallach, who seems to be in so many Western movies, plays the ugly. Lee Van Cleef is my personal favorite character in this. I know everyone usually pulls for Eli Wallach. Notice how no one goes for Clint Eastwood. Why? Because Franco Nero's cooler. I'm gonna die on this hill alone, AJ. I'm telling you, Franco Nero is cooler than Clint Eastwood. I won't hear otherwise. Oh, that's a tweet. Franco Nero is cooler than Clint Eastwood, and I won't hear otherwise. Oh, I'm gonna do some trolling when we're done here. Yeah, love this movie. They're on a quest for gold at the height of the Civil War, trying to avoid General Lee. It's engaging. It's got one of the all-time great finishes to movies, you know, a proper three-way Mexican standoff. Huge amount of tension, beautifully shot. One of the all-time great soundtracks. It's yeah. You know it, even if you haven't seen the movie, you know this piece of music. It's legendary. It really is legendary. And for the fact that it is, as a film, so legendary, you can't do a top 10 Rushmore and not put this film on. But I prefer number two.
Fair play. Fair play. Cool. I would like to comment, but it's to be seen.
Yes, Billy Mann. And Franco Nero is cooler than Clint Eastwood. Nico 2024. Biff of the Hobbit's in the house. Hey, Nico and AJ, my favorite Western is 3:10 to Yuma. Great film. It was my number
Original
nine.
or remake? Just out of interest.
Good question. Original or remake? And Mandrake says, Nico, you might reconsider that if you watch Django 2 from 1987. Here's my answer to that. La 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 la. Literally, like Gollum. Not listening. Not listening. Roll. Anyway, you're number three.
Do you know, I was torn with the punt and this one, but this is my punt from earlier. And yes, it's not the King of Cool, but they do share the name, Django Unchained. I would say it's the best version that Tarantino has given us of a Western. Of it is his best put out
Better than
of it.
Inglourious.
Look, I have Inglourious, but then if we're sticking to the actual Western theme, you know, like
Okay,
if
okay.
Western comes to
Not
mind,
style, actual genre. Okay.
This is it. Jamie Foxx was fun. Leonardo DiCaprio was amazing. Samuel Jackson, I really don't know how a man of color is able to say and act that way, because God, he made me hate him so badly in that.
How good,
And
which
Christoph Waltz.
means, how good was he? There's a
Yeah, I
top
know,
10 list.
absolutely amazing.
Top 10
Absolutely amazing.
actors who were so good that you continued to hate them after the credits.
Yeah, playing that house end to that degree was, it's
The fact that
something.
Quentin Tarantino got Samuel L. Jackson to agree to playing that. Damn. You know my problem with Django? The supporting cast are cooler than the main character.
Oh, but literally, as I was saying, Jamie Foxx was good. Everybody else levels it up. And
Voltz and DiCaprio, like, man. Just like,
Christoph Waltz is just amazing. And let's not forget the horse. But
don't forget
Kerry Washington as well. I'm not going to just leave her out while we're going through the list of people who make the
carry
film.
On, just closing the camera for a moment. Off you go. And I'm still here.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
I have
okay.
Company in the back who doesn't want to be on camera.
That's perfectly acceptable. I did wonder why you chose that angle when you done what you done, but hey, this is the way.
Is this seat's really comfortable?
We do. The show continues. But this is the secrets to live, guys, where we'd have just paused it normally. We can't do that here in live. But I really enjoyed everything that Django. I wasn't sure if I was gonna enjoy Django Unchained. But I had a nice journey with it, a fun journey with it. A slave who's now got his freedom and is out to get his missus back and is out to take out the evil oppressor who's caused him all the problem and is holding his woman at stake. There are many tones that you think. And what I like as well is in a time where you don't believe certain words should be said by certain people, Tarantino pushed the envelope and took the chance to show what it meant to say that and what it meant, but it kept it true to form in its nature, you know, of this is what you would have got in this time. I'm not going to desensitize it because of that. Some will say he pushed it a bit too much. At times, I do feel like it was thrown about too much. Hateful Eight, I think, even used it a bit more than this one, which really bugged me how much that word was used. And I've listened to a lot of rap albums. It's real. It just started to bug me. But I think this was a really good telling. And yes, I've not seen the original Django collection. I had been told prior to this, actually, about the history of Django. One of a really close friend, actually, her dad was telling me, like, this is Django and this is what it's all about. And I was like, yeah. But didn't get a chance to catch up with it this time. But I still believe for all the madness, for all the rankings, Jamie Foxx still did give a good performance. He wasn't the best in the film. There was an amazing shootout at the end that is all kinds of gory, which you're like, wow, you really brought some fire in that. But no, I had a good ride.
It was great, no doubt. As I say, the standout for me are very much the supporting characters, but it felt very different from other westerns, didn't it? It still had a western runtime, though. Yeesh. Like, Tarantino, his runtimes, man. That was your three, yes?
Indeed it was, yes.
That was your three, so over to my number two. Sorry, camera closing.
Yes. You can put the poster up.
No. We're all good. And we're good. Back in the room. Cool. My number two, Andy Hart, can I just say, you're wrong. Because my number two, not number one, is There Will Be Blood.
Ha. You know, there we go. Oh, sorry. My number two as well. Yeah.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. I think this might be the greatest acting performance ever.
One of the things that I always give credit to There Will Be Blood about, don't get me wrong, you could watch different films. In next week's episode, you'll hear me talk about the art of a silent movie in our modern age. But that first 10 minutes, 15 minutes, it's been a while since I've watched it, but I can't remember. Not a single word said, but everything told. You know, that's incredible. The art. I think that the open, and don't get me wrong, it's not to say that that's the beginning, the be all and end all of the film. It has a fantastic story, but that initial view of who Daniel Plainview is, understanding how he became who he was, what has led to certain situations, I thought was amazing in that film, and it continues.
But just the scope of this, the way that the West shifted from the way that the West and indeed America shifted from church to capitalism, and it was a violent transition, and it was a transition that was opposed by so many, and it was a transition that some, in this case Daniel Plainview, embraced wholeheartedly for egotistical personal gain. And the result of it is not only his complete raping and bastardization of the land, but of his psyche, his surroundings, his family. Just the it isn't without being, you know, overly dramatic, it is very much like a sort of quasi descent into madness, isn't it? Like, you can't tell me that man at the end going, "I drink your milkshake," and then in the bowling alley going, that's not a man who's sane of mind anymore. He's gone. He has been corrupted fully. Lord Acton, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Not Machiavelli, to you philosopher wannabes out there. But yes. Yes. Yeah, incredible. And Frank, taking that quick detour with you, Frank, Yagos and poor things getting some Oscar love. We are going to have some Oscar videos coming out on the channel this week, so please do stay tuned for that. And have you seen my review for Poor Things, Frank? But yeah, man, there will be blood. I joint to, ha, what a film. What a film. And so unlike any Western that we've mentioned on this list.
It's completely different. It's very different.
It's like art house Western. Like, let's do a Western where we don't need to do cowboys and Indians and the yeehaw. It's like, I hate that Americana business. I can't tell you how much I dislike it. This town ain't big enough for the both of us. Shut up. Unless your name's Franco Nero, you don't get to say that. Not going to stop. Will we do an Oscars topic stream? Not a stream. Well, you want to do it as a stream? Nah, we're not going to do it as a stream, buddy. But there's going to be a video we record directly after we wrap here, which is going to air most likely tomorrow, that is going to cover Oscars. And there'll be little Oscar news bits coming throughout the week. So stay tuned. And Andy Hart, I completely agreed. Go check out the review on the channel. I second that sentiment. Poor Things is freaking incredible. But we've both done our number two, so that brings us over to our worst.
Can I take a guess?
Huh?
Can I take a guess?
Well, Mandrake's not going to be happy. There's your clue.
It's the world of Tarantino, right?
Yep. I do apologize. I do apologize to you, Mandrake. The Hateful Eight is my worst. I think it is a tremendous piece of you-know-what. It's slow for unnecessary reasons. It insists on itself. The whole campaign with Tarantino being high on his own supply, going, "Oh, but this is shot in Panavision, so I'm not going to air it in certain cinemas that don't want to show it in its original form." Wow, he's going that deep. Jesus, the Panavision shots in this must be like poor if he's doubling down that hard. Now, the point of Panavision, getting geeky here as a videographer, thank you, AJ. The point of Panavision is to shoot grandiose, super wide stuff. Zulu, the old Michael Caine movie. That's a Panavision film. Grandiose African battles. Ben-Hur, Panavision. Big, sweeping chariot chases. I mean, if they still use Panavision now, I would say Lord of the Rings would be perfectly suited for Panavision. But Tarantino wanted to bring back this old thing that was used, granted, in a lot of Western movies, and he used this for precisely 3 minutes of the movie. So all of this marketing campaign, the return of Panavision to the silver screen, you won't believe how beautiful this movie is. Tarantino refuses to put this movie in Cineworld because they don't want to play it in Panavision, and he will only play it in its original format. Bro, you shot some mountains.
But the problem is, for a film,
shot the whole movie inside a frickin' haberdashery. This was like, to quote Dr. Evil, "You're the margarine of Reservoir Dogs. You're the Diet Coke of Reservoir Dogs. You're a quasi-reservoir. You're a semi-reservoir. Just one calorie, not Dogs enough." Sucks.
It's weird that he made such a fuss over something when it's not the main setting of the film. It bared no sense that you want something for extreme wide shots, and then you've got a cabin. You know, for, it's literally contained within four walls, 95% of the film. And look, the thing is, I remember you hating it, and I remember watching it. I don't... There were some parts that wind me up. I was like, well, that wasn't needed, X, Y, Z. But overall, I did enjoy it. Overall, I did enjoy it. But I would still say Django is the better of the two.
Only performance I really, really dug in it was Jennifer Jason Leigh. I thought she kicked ass. Everyone else in it, I was like, no, to be fair, Walter Goggins was pretty good. Samuel L. Jackson, I've never said this about him, I thought was so guilty of overacting in this. Kurt Russell, I thought, was mostly unintelligible. Michael Madsen was furniture. I mean, he was there. I saw him on my screen. This wasn't Tim Roth's fault. This is more down to the direction of what they wanted the character to do. Didn't resonate with me particularly. Channing Tatum was Channing Tatum.
He was.
You literally know what I mean by that. Like, say adios to your huevos. Bro, get back to dancing.
Listen, whether it's, he was just wearing different clothes from 21 Jump Street. Like, it's the same. He is in his dimension. And it is what it is. So, I mean, look, even Samuel L. Jackson for all his sins, you know what you're getting if you've got Samuel L. Jackson in the film. The range can only go so far, you know, whether it's Nick Fury or
yeah. Mandrake, I actually like your take on this. Hateful Eight is closer to The Thing than to Reservoir Dogs. That's actually a really good take. I actually quite like it. You know what? On that basis alone, I may go back and rewatch it, looking at it through the prism of, this isn't Reservoir Dogs, this is The Thing. I actually really like that take. Good for you. Listen, I always love it when someone gives me an alternative perspective. That's I can't say the D word, can I? We'll be demonetized for that. Every bumbaclot online.
I wouldn't have chose that to be the follow-up to Take Back from the D, but okay.
Yeah, but YouTube are racist. They probably won't know what the hell that means. So it's all good. Every fool that jumps onto Twitter and starts with the words, hot take. Newsflash. It's not a hot take. However, what Mandrake's just said here, this is a hot take. Watch it as if you were watching The Thing, not Reservoir Dogs. I really like that. I'm going to go back and watch it. I really like that take.
Nice. Well, yeah. As The Hateful Eight was released.
And thank you, Billy Mantz. I'm glad you agree. Sorry, AJ, carry on.
No, you're fine. As The Hateful Eight was released and there was this huge buzz and everyone was talking about it, Netflix thought they would jump on the bandwagon. We had The Hateful Eight. We had The Magnificent Seven. They decided to release...
Oh, I know where you're going. I know exactly where you're going.
The Ridiculous Six. I have never been so offended by a film in my life. But I thought this was absolute crap. And you know, sometimes you're like, well, what are they doing? And okay, they're trying to do a comedy version of... I think we've said this before. Adam Sandler either does really good or he does god-awful terrible. And this isn't a god-awful terrible. You know, this deal he had with Netflix where he was releasing comedies and they were just nothing. This was just absolutely terrible. It's a group of guys who have come together for some reason or another, or they've come to contest each other. And if you're a wrestling fan, you're going to understand, you soon find out it's the Dudley Boys, because it doesn't matter if you're black, white, Asian, tall, Asian. You find out that Daddy Ridiculous was, I don't even know what the hell they were called. They all found out they're brothers. So if you're in a Ridiculous Six, for better or worse, you are Daddy Ridiculous's kids. It wasn't Big Daddy Dudley in this situation, but it was terrible. You know when you're just sitting there watching something, you can't laugh, you just can't wait for the end. There was nothing comedic about it. There was nothing interesting about it. It just got more stupid as the minutes continued. And the credits was the best part of the film. Like, it's over. Like, I hated it. Like, the minute Western came in, I did kind of toy with the idea of, oh, do we play with Wild Wild West? But I thought, no, I'll keep that for my number one. No, I'm joking. I'm honestly joking, people. But, no, Ridiculous Six is the worst I've seen. Couldn't support it.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. It is pretty terrible. And, Papa ridiculous. I actually love everything about that. Yeah, man, that's actually really good. Yeah, Adam Sandler, it's weird, isn't it? Because he's done some good stuff with Netflix. Like Uncut Gems was really good, but then... Oh, I don't know.
What's the other one he'd done? He'd done another one that was really good as well. He'd done it after, and it was when he... Here's the thing. He can do serious, and you're like, wow, why have you never done this from earlier? He can also do comedy. Don't get me wrong. Adam Sandler does do watchable comedies, but other stuff are just... bottom of the barrel, and this is the lowest part of the barrel.
Going back to what you guys said here, Mandrake and Andy Hart, remember I said at the top, I am a big fan of Rio Bravo. Really, really charming movie. I just couldn't find space for it on my top 10. Yeah. So here we go then. My number one, which I'm assuming was The Punt.
If I'm wrong, flip me, but I remember the love you had for it. And
you know me. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah.
This movie exudes charm, coolness. It's got a compelling story. You literally cannot take your eyes off of the two leads. The relationship they have is wonderful. It's got genuinely one of the... Sorry, I think someone's trying to jack my car. Please hold the phone.
Okay. That is not what I was expecting to hear in the slightest. I just hope they know that my boy's a Muay Thai champ. So good luck if they are trying to do anything to his car. But we digress. I'm going to return the favor that he... gave me earlier, and I'm going to go full screen until he returns. I would love, like, here's the thing. When we've done, I think, films of the Golden Age or Silver Age, when we had our 100 episodes, Nico promoted the hell out of this film, and I watched it myself after. I had a good time, but dare I say, this is where we could talk, and he's my boy, and I'm not going to say it in a bad way, slight overhype. It's not that I didn't enjoy the film. I just found the pace to be slightly longer. It was a bit longer than I expected, but this is a Western. So it just kind of...
Wash your mouth out.
Bro, it is what it is. I'm just saying this. I didn't say I hate the film. It's a good film. It's my number three, for God's sake. Four. It's not in a bad position.
Dude, this movie, I went into it thinking...
Just for the record, no one was jacking the car.
Someone was trying.
Jesus.
Yeah.
There we go.
Literally, I can see my car right there. Some fool, literally in eye view, starts looking around the bloody car. I'm like, hey, gone. I will say this. But I went into Butch Cassidy expecting another lumbering Western. Because the one thing you have to say about Westerns, whether I like them or not, they're not short on star power. Between your John Waynes and Clint Eastwoods, your Franco Neros, your Jimmy Stewart, Steve McQueen, Paul Newman's, Robert Redford's, movie star, and I'm only scratching the surface here, but movie stars back then, and to a degree still now, Russell Crowe, Christian Bale, Bardem, Harrelson, like people gravitate towards this genre. There are characters that permeate the Western genre that actors clearly want to grind their teeth on. Credit to them. But this is an old one, and I went... You're going full Django, trust me, Gavin, I will have. This movie, I went into it thinking it's going to be like another Bogart in Casablanca, another Eastwood in Unforgiven. It's going to be one that's overhyped. It's going to be a slow burn. And I was like, not overhyped, not a slow burn. Lovely soundtrack. The screenplay is incredible. The pacing didn't bother me at all. I love the way it was like a grind, but in a good way. You could feel that tension of them being tracked constantly. It's like, we'll jump in the water. He'll never track us. Wrong. We'll run across rocks. He can't track us through rocks. Wrong. It's like, this guy, leave me alone. He's like the Baba Yaga. I loved it. Dude, and that final shootout at the end, which ends on that kind of cliffhanger slash fade out, because you know what's happened. It's poetry in motion, this film. Wonderful. Masterpiece.
Talking of that cliffhanger, it's ever so popular and kind of replicated by someone else. Question that kind of was posed, and I'm going to ask you and everyone else is free to answer as well. Would you class Thelma and Louise as a Western?
Yes. Not necessarily. I guess it is a road trip movie. That's not a genre.
I know.
Road trip is not a genre. It's almost a subgenre. Yeah, I guess, you know, in the kind of overarching main genres of cinema, you know, drama, thriller, action, comedy, romance, Western, horror, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think calling it a Western is kind of factually kind of correct, but also greatly missing the point.
As I say, I stick with the question and I put it out there. Didn't make the list, so that's where we're at. But yeah, okay. Yeah, I respect the hell out of it. It was a great film. I had a great ride with it. I just, pacing was just slightly off for me. But again, it's weird because you hear the love of a film, but then you don't link it to the genre that it's in. So then you know the tropes of what you should be expecting kind of thing. So maybe that was...
Andy Hart and Mandrake both think that Thelma and Louise is not a Western, by the way.
Fair play.
Before AJ delivers his number one, guys, forgot to mention this. Could you guys please drop your top tens and your top tens or your Rushmore? So your top 10 Westerns or your four favorite Westerns. Drop them down in the comment section. We'll star them and read them out once we finish here. AJ, over to you, mate.
Right, in at number one. Very much linked to your number three. Just sad that I've not made it that far in. Fistful of Dollars. Now, I know it just feels like the easy escape and the most Western, like the most cliche of Westerns, but I also feel that having watched it and going through this journey of taking on Westerns throughout this.
Is this a first watching for you? Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I was quite taken in. I found myself intrigued from the beginning. I felt like I would be with Magnificent Seven in the same way. They both started with a keen interest. We're like, okay, this has got a nice pace. But where Magnificent Seven sadly had to compete against its original, this was its original, you know, Fistful of Dollars. The more I watched Magnificent Seven, as I said earlier, without hating on it, it wasn't this. I just like the concept of this man coming into a town. There's these two rival gangs and he's found a way to play them against each other. He's just owning it. He without seeing Django and your Franco, I was like, ooh, Clint's delivering here. I found a bit of charm in John Wayne. I found a lot of charm from Clint Eastwood in this. And I was the more I watched, the more I was like, this has to be number one. And I know it would. I was like, you know, sometimes you've got something and you don't want it to fit right into the trope of what it is. Like, no, obviously that's going to be your number one. I didn't want it to be that.
No, why not? If it is, it is. You know, to quote the wrestling analogies we sometimes give in the group, sometimes the simple decision is the right one, right?
Yeah.
In this case, if it's your first viewing, mate, I get it.
Yeah, and again, you know, listening to you saying like a few dollars more is what it's after there, and then obviously you got to complete it. I just didn't have time to complete the trilogy to be able to put it that way and say which is my favorite, hence why I was so quiet earlier.
There's no wrong answers with that trilogy, mate. There's literally no wrong answers, and there's not a bad one in the trilogy. Like, we always talk about what's the perfect trilogy. We pull for Toy Story, we pull for Lord of the Rings, we pull for the original Star Wars trilogy. You've got to put this in there. This has to go in there. It is a perfect trilogy. There is not a bad movie in this trilogy.
I'm excited for the next two because I had a really good time with this film. A really good time with this film.
So how do we rush more this?
Look, for better or worse, I'm very easy to give up my number one because knowing that the trilogy has everyone has a favorite in what have you. I'm aware the good, the bad, and the ugly. Even down to Back to the Future Part 3, small spoiler, Marty gets inspiration from the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's pop culture. It's reference. As you said, it's the music. It is that film in the trilogy. So for me to compete, like, nah, it has to be Fistful, it's kind of stupid when you know which the popular one is. It is what it is on that case.
So I'm in a conundrum here. Well, actually, no, we're not, because we both had it. So the good, the bad, and the ugly, because it's Man with No Name, so we're putting that one on.
We've got that. We've got There Will Be Blood, and we've got Django.
And we've got The Magnificent Seven.
We do. However, I'm willing to sacrifice Magnificent Seven for how low it is, because, as per live show of rules, the screeners get to pick. Now, if they choose to
JT say, might disown us if we don't have The Magnificent Seven in there. Like, he was very, very... yeah, this is the problem. That might be the pick this week.
But here's the other thing. Here's the other thing where I could... I'm going to give the people the Henry Ford choice of life. Because as the rules state, it needs to be on both screeners' list. And The Magnificent Seven is the only other one.
Well, so just Butch like you Cassidy, have any... The Sundance Kid is also there, mate.
Which one?
Butch Cassidy.
Yeah, but hold on. We've got Good, Ben, the Ugly.
We've got five in common this week, brother.
Oh. Okay, guys. All right. For the benefit of JT, and to shock everyone because they thought it was going to be a number one and it wasn't, do we put Butch Cassidy versus There Will Be Blood? Those two on the line. We put Magnificent Seven in for JT. That's the only way I can play it.
So we put Magnificent Seven in there, yeah?
Just JT, just though it was ranked extremely low. So if you end up getting M'd, that's your own fault, bro.
Getting M'd. So what's the fourth? There Will Be Blood.
Well, There Will Be Blood versus...
We've got three. The two we've got remaining are Django Unchained and There Will Be Blood. That's what I guess we need to put over to...
Okay, yeah, I'll do that then. Yeah, we'll do that.
Live chat, want to know from you now. There Will Be Blood or Django Unchained? Go. We've got seven people still watching us live, and I want to know from you guys. You've got seven people watching. I want at least five answers here. There Will Be Blood or Django Unchained for the final spot. We've got one for There Will Be Blood from Gavin Mann. Frank Torres says Blood. That's two.
One more.
Mandrake. Mandrake, There Will Be Blood. That's three.
Okay. That's it. That's not wasting time.
Cool.
The people have spoken.
The people have spoken. Let's announce the Rushmore, and then we'll go over people's selections. Riri Thomas, There Will Be Blood. Andy Hart, There Will Be Blood. Everyone's picked There Will Be Blood. For Django. Goodbye.
Racism.
Hashtag not my Django.
Do you know what I mean? Oh, do not make that a tweet. I know. Remember the recorders of X that I've warned you about? They will turn up.
All right, let's do this. Ladies and gentlemen, the official movie Mount Rushmore of Western movies in no particular order is...
There Will Be Blood.
Our second entry is...
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Our third entry is...
The Magnificent Seven.
Our final entry into the movie Mount Rushmore of Westerns is...
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I mean, do you know what?
Good Rushmore, that.
Jeez. It is actually a really good Rushmore. Like, if you just sit back and say it as a Rushmore, that's a pretty strong contenders list.
Magnificent. It really is.
With like minimal hate when I say this. But even for Django, I don't even know if I'd want Django on the Rushmore, to be honest. So
I agree. I actually really like this Rushmore.
Yeah. Yeah.
But enough about us. Let's see what the people have picked. Let's see what we got. Let's start with Andy Hart here. Who has picked as his top 10 Westerns of all time? In no
Searchers was the one I wanted to watch, but I didn't get a chance to.
Same. I didn't get around to that. Stagecoach, The Searchers, Rio Bravo, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, Django, the original, The Outlaw, Josie Wales, The Wild Bunch, Unforgiven, can't stand that film, Once Upon a Time in the West, can't stand that film, and Open Range. Frank Torres, My Rushmore, Tombstone, available on Disney Plus, Unforgiven, no, 310 to Yuma, the remake, True Grit, the remake, and the worst is freaking Wild Wild West. Gavin,
you've Mann, obviously not been Ridiculous Six. That's all I can say.
Gavin Mann says 10 to 1, Bucaro, Go West, Way Out West, For a Few Dollars More, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Tombstone, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, Once Upon a Time in the West. Why does everyone like that movie? Once Upon a Time in the West, and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Mandrake.
Gavin's actual words.
Mate. Again, Once Upon a Time in the West. What is it with that film?
You know what really made me want to watch Once Upon a Time in the West? I knew it was a trilogy which ends in the film that you really liked.
Once Upon a Time in America.
Yeah, that's what really
nothing to
me.
Do. Like, the two films are nothing to
I've
do
heard,
with each other.
Yeah,
Once Upon a Time in America, incredible. But yeah, Once Upon a Time in the this is from Mandrake. Once Upon a Time in the West, The Proposition, The Unforgiven. Get that film, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Butch Cassidy, The Searchers, Blazing Saddles, nice one, High Noon, and True Grit. Riri Thomas, as a Rushmore goes, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Fistful of Dollars, 310 to Yuma, and Django. Nice.
Nice list.
Nice list indeed. That was good. And Billy Mount's Rushmore. I love you for this, Billy Mount. The Quick and the Dead, Quigley Down Under, Django Unchanged, Kuima, the OG Django, and the worst is Hateful Eight. I love the fact that you've put The Quick and the Dead in there. I respect you so much for that honesty, because I love that film as well.
Cool. Cool, cool, cool.
That's well, guys, a wrap.
That is a wrap indeed. Yeah, a few live issues took place. Thank God for Imodium is all I'm going to say, because I'm still here. And yeah, Nico and a carjacking, potential carjacking taking place.
Man, but, tried it, you know. You're going to kill him.
But more than anything, thank you
everyone
guys for tuning
posh
in.
White boy with the long hair.
More than anything, you guys come back, even though it's not a regular occurrence to get a live. So to have you take the time, because you could, with the other show, you could watch it in your own given time whenever you want. You've taken the time to come here and join us for a live, and that means more than you guys could actually imagine. It really does. So I thank you for it, and yeah. We will catch you on the other side. Thank you so much.
It's so nice considering that, you know, you're not fine-tuned the way you were in season 5 to having weekly live streams. You know, this is, you know, we do it now and then. And it's really nice to see the old faces pop up. Your Billies, your Franks, your Gavins, your Andys, Chris Trengove, we miss you, bro. Your Riri's, Mandrake, good to have you in the family, man. Like, it's just... RJ Skarenki always leaves a comment. Shame Francis Lalonde couldn't make it, but I did message them and they couldn't make it, sadly. But yeah, look, it's just been really cool seeing everyone and doing this. And listen, Andy and Gavin, I know this was something you've been asking us to do for a few seasons now. I hope it wasn't too painful. Who knows? We may revisit Westerns.
I haven't forgiven you for Bad Dog yet. I know that.
We may revisit Westerns in Season 10, who knows? We may do another top 10 Western movies. Wait.
It takes a while. It takes a while to revisit.
It really does. These movies slow, bro. And not the Pokemon. But glad you enjoyed it, Billy. That's nice to hear. Happy days. And yeah, I think we're going to kind of just wrap it there. What do you think?
Yeah, guys, so once again, look, I mean, for most of you, you know it, but again, please tell a friend to tell a friend. Do like, comment, subscribe. And if you are new to it, like Mandrake, hit that notification bell, because there's Silver Screen news, there's Silver Screen Movie Mount Rushmores every week. And more than everything, guys, head on over to X to do that laser focus vote. Head on over to at Movie Pulse from you for good old JT and obviously at JT Rushmore. But until the next time, I am the one AJ Anthony Jordan.
And I'm Nico Miro. Stay tuned to the channel this week for all sorts of goodness on the Oscars and a bit more news. And we'll see you on Twitter, back here on the YouTube channel on the video. And we'll let you know when the next live video is coming. Bye for now, guys.
See ya.